If you'd like to follow along with this episode, you can do so by visiting my website, latinamericanail.org, clicking the resources tab next to support. In there, you'll see the square titled, A Complete Guide to Buying a House in the United States, Part 1. Clicking it will bring up the PDF for you, and inside contains all the information in today's episode. The formal process of buying a home as an immigrant isn't much different from buying a home as a native-born citizen. However, getting a loan can be much more difficult for immigrants. This is a result of structural discrimination against immigrants in the house buying process. Immigrants' financial profiles don't look like a regular home buyer's profile, and as a result, immigrants are usually marked as more high risk by loan services. Although this does make the process more difficult, it is remedial. The government and specialized financial institutions can help an immigrant buy a house. Much like the retirement episode, I decided to do this episode in two parts because of how informative it is, so make sure that you listen to part two next week. I'm Kevin Munoz, this is the Leo Podcast, and today is Monday, March 1st. First, let's go over the 14 steps I'll be covering between part one and part two of this episode. First, know your rights. Two, check your credit score. Three, budgeting. This includes determining how much home you can afford, saving for the down payment and the closing costs. Four, know your loans. Five, choosing a lender, which includes knowing the documentations and factors that go into it. Six, pre-approval. Seven, finding the right real estate agent. Eight, determine your priorities. Nine, start house hunting. 10, make a smart offer. 11, get a home inspection. 12, shop for homeowners insurance. 13, make sure the home is appraised. 14, close on your new home. Let's begin with knowing your rights. Before even thinking about buying a house, it's important that you know your rights. Immigrants suffer from systematic discrimination when it comes to buying a house. Housing and Urban Development is the government agency that oversees housing discrimination issues and resolve complaints. The Fair Housing Act, FHA, is a law that makes it illegal for housing providers to refuse to rent or sell homes to people based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or disability. HUD will hunt down violators of this law and vigorously pursue enforcement actions against them. As HUD points out, housing discrimination is not only illegal, it contradicts in every way the principles of freedom an opportunity that Americans treasure. HUD is committed to ensuring that everyone is treated equally when searching for a place to call home. Some options aren't always protected under FHA, including owner-occupied buildings with no more than four units, single-family housing sold or rented with the use of a broker, and housing operated by organizations and private clubs that limit occupancy to members. There are a few of many acts that are specifically banned. These are someone selling or renting out housing can't on the basis of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or disability, refuse to rent or sell housing, refuse to negotiate for housing, make housing unavailable, change terms, conditions, or privileges of the deal. And in regards to mortgages, they can refuse to make a mortgage loan, refuse to provide information regarding loans, impose different terms or conditions on a loan, such as different interest rates, points, or fees, discriminate in appraising the property, set different terms or conditions for purchasing a loan, and in general, they can threaten, coerce, intimidate, or interfere with a deal. Make discriminatory statements in connection with the sale or rental of housing. If you experience discrimination, call the HUD office nearest to you. In short, it's important as an immigrant to know your rights in the United States. You should also be on the lookout for predatory lending, which oftentimes includes unreasonable interest rates and terms. Now let's move on to number two, checking your credit score. Once you know your rights, the next important step you have to take is to check your credit score. Before you begin the process of buying a house, you want to make sure that you're actually in a position to take on this significant milestone. That's why the first step is to check your credit score and review your finances. Obtaining a loan is not always easy. All mortgage lenders will look at your credit score and financial history before agreeing to provide you with a loan. You should be one step ahead of them. Your credit and financial history will dictate whether you're able to obtain a mortgage and at what interest rate. Buyers with high credit scores tend to secure better interest rate, so you must get a sense of where you stand before you get deeper into the process. For me, it was extremely important to have a high credit score because to the banks, I was seen as a high risk due to my legal status. Having a higher credit score meant lenders would have more confidence in my ability to repay my future debts as agreed. Credit score of 620 or higher should allow you to qualify for a mortgage, but government-backed loans may allow for lower score in some cases as low as 500. I'll go over the type of loans I'm familiar with further in the episode and their requirements as well. Third, budgeting. Believe me, budgeting is a major key to buying a house and making it slightly less stressful. When my family and I were looking for a house, we thought we had to save up a good amount of money. But to our surprise, once we saw the closing costs, we were short. But luckily, we were able to cover it with some help from our families and close on the house. So this is why I'm saying budgeting is super important before looking into houses. My tip is, whatever you budget for your house, down payment, closing costs, take your total and add an additional $3,000 to $5,000 to your budget. Although a mortgage spreads out the cost of buying a house over many years, you'll still need to provide some money up front to pay for your down payment and closing costs. Unless you're getting a VA loan or a USDA loan, which don't require a down payment, you'll need to make sure you have funds saved up for a down payment. The minimum on a conventional loan, like a 30-year fixed loan, is 3%. An FHA loan is available with a down payment of 3.5%. Keep in mind, the larger the down payment, the more equity you'll have, and the lower your monthly mortgage payments will be. By paying more upfront, you'll save on interest and be less likely to have to pay private mortgage insurance. Along with your down payment, you'll have to save money for closing costs. These are fees associated with processing and securing your loan. Although the amount you'll need will vary depending on your loan amount and the tax requirements in your area, you can generally expect closing costs to be 3% to 6% of the purchase price. To ensure you know exactly what you'll owe, your lenders will provide you with a loan estimate within 3 days of receiving your loan application. This 3-page form, which is required by law, will itemize the loan terms, projected payments, and closing costs for your potential mortgage, so you're aware of precisely what you'll need to have saved. When budgeting, I highly recommend going online and searching mortgage calculators with closing costs so you have an idea of what your numbers might look like depending on the price of the house. Ask yourself, how much can you afford to spend on a house? Many immigrants prefer to pay cash for a house since getting a loan can be difficult as an immigrant. However, that's obviously not an option for everyone, and it certainly wasn't in my case. Instead, the majority save up for the house over the years and they have the money for a down payment. As my family and I did. The rest of this episode will focus on those seeking to buy a home with financing, especially immigrants. If an immigrant is seeking financing, then how much he can afford to spend on a house depends on two factors. First, how much a lending institution will loan to them. And second, how much the immigrant is willing to spend. So the first factor hinges on how big of a loan they can obtain. The second factor hinges on how much they actually want to spend on the house. Many people find it best to purchase a home below their full buying potential. A mortgage payment consists of four components: principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, PITI for short. Generally, a buyer can afford to finance a property that costs between 2 and 2.5 times their income. So for example, an immigrant earning $100,000 a year can afford a mortgage of $200,000 to $250,000. So if a prospective immigrant homeowner is willing to buy a house that costs 2.5 times his income, how much he can actually spend still depends on how much an institution will lend to him. However, if you apply jointly, you can afford more house and even split the costs of the mortgage. This is, of course, if you have the option. I'll give you an example. My family and I applied for a conventional loan between my sister, my dad, and myself. This means all three of us would be on the mortgage and we're all responsible for it. The way a joint mortgage works is that it allows two or more people to purchase a home together and the buyers fill out a joint mortgage application. One of the main benefits of applying for a joint mortgage is that you'll have more income to put towards your home purchase. Including two earners or more on your application means you're more likely to be approved for a mortgage. You may be able to borrow more money and you could purchase a more expensive home. On a joint mortgage, all borrowers' credit scores matter. Lenders collect credit and financial information, including credit history, your current debt, and income. Lenders determine what's called the lower middle score and usually look at each applicant's middle score. For example, say your credit scores from the three credit bureaus are 723, 716, and 699, and your partners are 688, 657, and 649. Lenders will then use the lower of the two middle scores, which is 657. The lower middle score system means both applicants' credit scores matter, but the lower score matters the most. Therefore, the decision of whether to include a spouse or another co-borrower on a mortgage application comes down to which option makes the most financial sense. Think of it this way. If your co-borrower does have bad credit, there are a few options available. First, improve your co-borrower's credit score. Make sure all outstanding credit card debts are paid and that any remaining credit balances are under 30% of their high limit, a significant variable that gets factored into their credit score. Find a different cosigner. Another option is to find another co-borrower. Ask a relative who has a high credit score to help you get approved for your mortgage. Every lender has different rules for cosigners, so check to make sure that you can work with a cosigner. Eventually, if you and your partner's credit history improves, you can consider refinancing the current loan and take the co-borrower off the loan and add the partner with improved credit. Now, number four, know your loans. Now let's cover some of the most common mortgage loans types that you'll come across that I'm familiar with. Also, note that these are the ones that I'm familiar with. There are a few others out there that you can look into, but generally, these are the ones that you'll encounter. Let's start off with conventional loan. It can be used for your primary home or vacation or investment property. This type of loan is not insured by the federal government. Generally, lenders require you to pay private mortgage insurance, which is known as PMI. On many conventional loans, when you put down less than 20% of the home's purchase price. On our loan, we had to pay PMI because we didn't have enough to pay more than the minimum. We plan to refinance once we reach 20% equity. However, if you can put more towards your down payment in order to get rid of PMI, then it's definitely worth it in my opinion. As I mentioned before, this is also the loan my family and I went with because in 2019, DACA recipients and work permit holders didn't qualify for FHA loans. If you don't know, DACA recipients do qualify for FHA loans now under the Biden administration. Some pros of the conventional mortgages is that it can be used for a primary home, a second home, or investment property. Overall, borrowing costs tend to be lower than other types of mortgages, even if interest rates are slightly higher. You can ask your lender to cancel PMI once you reach 20% equity. You can pay as little as 3% down on loans backed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Some cons of conventional mortgages are that it requires a minimum FICO score of 620 or higher. You must have a debt-to-income ratio of 45% to 50%. You'll likely need to pay PMI if your down payment is less than 20% of the sales price. Significant documentation required to verify income, assets, down payments, and employment. So who should get one? Conventional loans are ideal for borrowers with strong credit, a stable income, and employment history, and a down payment of at least 3%. Now let's go over the government-insured loans. The U.S. government isn't a mortgage lender, but it does play a role in helping more Americans become homeowners. Three government agencies-backed mortgages are the Federal Housing Administration, which is FHA loans, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA loans, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, VA loans. FHA loans previously not available to DACA recipients, but as I mentioned before, now with Biden's administration, this has become one more option for us. Backed by the FHA, these types of home loans help make ownership possible for borrowers who don't have a large down payment saved up or don't have pristine credit. Borrowers need a minimum FICO score of 580 to get the FHA maximum of 96.5% financing with a 3.5% down payment. However, a score of 500 is accepted if you put at least 10% down. FHA loans require two mortgage insurance premiums. One is paid up front and the other is paid annually for the life of the loan if you put less than 10% down, which can increase the overall cost of your mortgage. USDA loans help moderate to low-income borrowers buy homes in rural areas. You must purchase a home in USDA-eligible areas and meet certain income limits to qualify. Some USDA loans do not require a down payment for eligible borrowers with low incomes. VA loans provide flexible, low-interest mortgages for members of the United States military, active duty, and veterans, and their families. VA loans do not require a down payment or PMI, and closing costs are generally capped and may be paid by the seller. A funding fee is charged on VA loans as a percentage of the loan amount to help offset the program cost to taxpayers. This fee, as well as other closing costs, can be rolled into most VA loans or paid up front at closing. Some pros of government-insured loans. The lack of PMI coupled with exceptionally low rates is what makes a VA loan such a great deal for qualified veterans. They also help you finance a home when you don't qualify for a conventional loan. Credit requirements are more relaxed. You don't need a large down payment. They're open to repeat and first-time buyers. And some cons of government-insured loans is that many of these loans have mandatory mortgage insurance premiums that cannot be canceled on some loans. You could also have higher overall borrowing costs. Expect to provide more documentation depending on the loan type to prove eligibility. So who should get one? Government-insured loans are ideal if you have a low cash savings or less than stellar credit and can't qualify for a conventional loan. VA loans tend to offer the best terms and most flexibility compared to other loan types for qualified borrowers. You don't need to be legal and documented to buy a home. Many undocumented immigrants own homes, 3.4 million of them to be precise. They either buy with cash or obtain ITIN mortgage instead. An ITIN, for those who haven't listened to me mention it numerous times in my previous episodes, is an individual tax identification number. They are issued by the IRS for immigrants who need to file taxes but are ineligible for a Social Security number. Some institutions specialize in providing ITIN loans. These loans usually come with a higher 7 to 8% interest rate. To get an ITIN, submit a Form W-7 application for IRS individual taxpayer identification numbers to apply. For an ITIN loan, an institution requires a government ID card, matricula consular ID or passport, 2 years of employment in the same or similar line of work, it can be salaried or self-employed, 2 years of tax returns using their ITIN number, buyers must be an owner occupant, minimum 20% down payment. Here are a few immigrant-friendly mortgage services. Bank of the West offers loans for people without U.S. credit. Alterra Home Loans offer loans to people with low or no U.S. credit. Quantic Bank specializes in immigrant-friendly services like loans for foreign nationals. Guadalupe Credit Union provides ITIN loans to people in New Mexico. The Latino Community Credit Union specializes in financing Latino immigrants. Small local services can be more immigrant-friendly. Now let's go over fixed-rate mortgages. Fixed-rate mortgages keep the same interest rate over the life of your loan, which means your monthly mortgage payment always stays the same. Fixed loans typically come in terms of 15 years, 20 years, or 30 years. My family and I have a conventional loan for 30 years fixed, but a good tip someone gave us and put into play is to make extra monthly payments towards the principal. Let's say your remaining balance on your home is $200,000. Your current principal and interest payment is $993 every month on a 30-year fixed-rate loan. You decide to make an additional $300 payment towards principal every month to pay off your home faster. By adding $300 to your monthly payment, you'll save just over $64,000 in interest and pay off your home over 11 years sooner. The pros of a fixed-rate mortgage include that your monthly principal and interest payments stay the same throughout the life of the loan. You can more precisely budget other expenses month to month. Some of the cons of the fixed mortgage rates is that you'll generally pay more interest with a longer term loan. It takes longer to build equity in your home. Interest rates typically are higher than rates on adjustable rate mortgages. So who should get one? If you plan to stay in your home for at least 7 to 10 years, a fixed rate mortgage offers stability with your monthly payments. Then there's adjustable rate mortgages. Unlike the stability of fixed rate loans, adjustable rate mortgages, also known as ARMs, have fluctuating interest rates that can go up or down with market conditions. Many ARM products have a fixed interest rate for a few years before the loan changes to a variable interest rate for the remainder of the term. Look for an ARM that caps how much your interest rate or monthly mortgage rate can increase so that you don't wind up in financial trouble when the loan resets. Some pros of the adjustable rate mortgages is that you'll enjoy a lower fixed rate in the first few years of the homeownership. You'll save a substantial amount of money on interest payments. Some cons of adjustable rate mortgages is that your monthly mortgage payments could become unaffordable, resulting in a loan default. Another con is that home values may fall in a few years, making it harder to refinance or sell your home before the loan resets. Who should get one? You must be comfortable with a certain level of risk before getting an ARM. If you don't plan to stay in your home beyond a few years, an ARM could save you big on interest payments. The fifth step is choosing a lender. If you're an immigrant under DACA or a person of color in general, I can't stress enough how important it is to find a lender that you'll be comfortable with. For me and my family, we asked around till we eventually found someone who is fully aware of what DACA is and what our limitations are. Our broker has worked with other DACA recipients before and has relationships built with banks that were willing to approve our mortgage. Our real estate agent spoke Spanish, so it was easier and more comfortable for our parents. These things matter when you're making a big life decision. Even our lawyer was recommended by someone I trusted, and he was great. Having a lawyer and a real estate agent, while not mandatory, is super important for first-time homebuyers. It might be more costly, but as a first-time homebuyers who don't know much, in our experience, was worth the cost. Because they will answer all your questions and guide you through the process, making sure that you understand it and that you're not being taken advantage of by the seller or any other party. Now let's go over the documentation lenders typically request. A traditional mortgage provider will likely request these documents: the last 2 months of statements for all asset accounts. This includes savings, retirement, brokerages, and checking account. The last 2 years W-2 forms. The last 2 years tax returns. Most recent months pay stubs. Your last two pay stubs if you're paid every 2 weeks, and your last pay stub if you get paid monthly. If you're self-employed, a year-to-date profit and loss statement, 1099s for the last 2 years, copy of a driver's license, copy of Social Security card. Of course, for new immigrants, providing these documents may not be an option. Some lenders will accept alternative documents to show credit history. This could include things like rental history, payment history for bills, like utilities, gas, electric, water, cable, TV, payment history for non-payroll deducted medical, life, auto, or renter's insurance, payment history for school tuition, credit history from a foreign independent credit reporting agency, written verification from foreign creditors, establishing a credit history. Now let's move on to the various factors lenders will consider when determining how much to loan a buyer. Some factors are gross income. This is the how much you make before income taxes, and include bonus income, part-time earnings, self-employment earnings, Social Security benefits, disability, alimony, and child support. Front-end ratio. This is the percentage of your gross income that you can put towards your mortgage each month. Lenders usually keep this number below 35% of the total income. Back-end ratio, or a debt-to-income ratio. This is the percentage of your income needed to pay off your other debts, like credit card payments, child support, and other loans. Most lenders won't let this number exceed 36%. Your credit rating. This is the number credit card companies give you to determine the risk of lending you money. This is where most immigrants get snagged. Most new immigrants don't have a credit history with American lenders, and therefore have a low credit score, and therefore won't be issued a mortgage. If they are issued a mortgage, it will be at a higher interest rate or annual percentage rate. Immigrants should start building credit soon after entering the country. Credit scores are ranked between 850, which is perfect, and 300, which is just terrible. The other thing is down payment. This is the amount an immigrant pays in cash for the house. The colloquial norm is that lenders require at least 20% of the total price as a down payment. If an immigrant is able to pay more than 20%, then the deal may be more enticing to the lender. The sixth step is getting pre-approved for the loan. Getting pre-qualified for a loan is not a guarantee that you'll actually be able to obtain a loan. When you get pre-qualified, lenders will only estimate your finances based on the information that you provide. On the other hand, getting pre-approved for a loan requires a thorough investigation of your finances that includes the verification of your income, your assets, and your credit rating. When you get pre-approved for a loan, you're guaranteeing that you'll be able to obtain the loan, assuming that your finances don't change. A pre-approval will tell you exactly how much the bank is willing to lend you and specify the costs of obtaining the loan. Furthermore, getting pre-approved will demonstrate to sellers that you're a serious buyer who is ready and able to buy their home. And the seventh and final step for this episode is finding the right real estate agent. There are some buyers who decide that they don't want to work with a real estate agent, but that is often a huge mistake. A real estate agent will represent you throughout the home buying process to ensure that you find the right home. Ask the important questions, make an appropriate offer, and have the power to negotiate and receive the necessary disclosures. Real estate agents take the stress out of the experience by providing buyers with knowledge of the market and the skills in the negotiation process. Furthermore, agents' expertise and skill are provided to buyers without charge. So you're probably thinking, how is this possible? Well, as a buyer, your agent is only paid a commission if you close on a new home, and the commission that they receive is paid through the purchasing price of the house. So it's technically the seller who pays for your representation. Therefore, the question shouldn't be, should you find a real estate agent? It should be, how do you find the right agent? The way to find a good agent is by asking the right questions. Things like, how long have you been working as a real estate agent? What makes you different than other agents? How many customers or clients are you currently working with? What experience do you have finding homes in my price range? How knowledgeable are you about my desired area? Are you willing to provide me with references? Real estate agents play a big role in a successful and stress-free home buying experience, so it's crucial that you find a good one. Now let's go over the key takeaways for part one. One, know your rights. Before thinking about buying a house, it's important you know your rights. Immigrants suffer from systematic discrimination when it comes to buying a house. Housing and Urban Development is the government agency that oversees housing discrimination issues and resolves complaints. Two, check your credit score. Your credit and financial history will dictate whether you're able to obtain a mortgage and at what interest rate. Buyers with higher credit scores tend to secure better interest rates, so you must get a sense of where you stand before you get deeper into the process. Third step is budgeting. Ask yourself, how much can you afford to spend on a house? Save for down payment and closing costs. Although the amount you'll need will vary depending on your loan amount and the tax requirements in your area, you can generally expect closing costs to be 3% to 6% of the purchasing price. Fourth step is know your loans. There are government-insured loans such as FHA, USDA, and VA. Then there's also a conventional loan. There are other types of loans, but the ones I mentioned are the ones you're most likely to encounter. The fifth step is choosing a lender. Know the documentation you're going to be asked for, so you're better prepared when seeking a lender. Be aware of the various factors lenders will consider when determining how much to loan a buyer. Sixth step is pre-approval. Getting pre-approved for a loan requires a thorough investigation of your finances that includes the verification of your income, your assets, and credit rating. When you get pre-approved for a loan, you're guaranteeing that you'll be able to obtain the loan, assuming your finances don't change. The seventh step is finding the right real estate agent. There are some buyers who decide that they don't want to work with a real estate agent, but that is often a huge mistake. A real estate agent will represent you throughout the home buying process to ensure that you find the right home, that you ask the important questions, make an appropriate offer, have the power to negotiate, and receive the necessary disclosures. While the home buying process can be confusing, I hope to better equip you with the knowledge through this episode. Part 2 will be released next week, so make sure you're following me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on Instagram at LatinAmericaNeo, and also on my website, latinamericaneo.org, to be notified when it's released. Let me know your thoughts on today's episode through my Instagram at LatinAmericaNeo. This podcast is not investment advice, and I am not a qualified licensed investment advisor. All information on here, including any ideas, opinions, views, predictions, forecasts, commentaries, suggestions, or stock picks expressed or implied, are for informational, entertainment, or educational purposes only and should not be construed as personal investment advice. Conduct your own due diligence or consult a licensed financial advisor or a broker before making any and all investment decisions. Any investments, trades, speculations, or decisions made on the basis of any information found on this podcast, expressed or implied, are committed at your own risk, financial or otherwise.